taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, there are certain things that we use, certain, phrases, sayings that they all just, we've heard them so often, they just kind of click into our minds. One of the ones I'm fond of is, there are lies, darn lies, and statistics. So I see statistics used all sorts of different ways. Many of them I don't trust, but statistics are a part of our lives. They are a tool for analysis, but like any tool, they only function when they're used properly. You try to use a screwdriver as a hammer, it's not going to work very well. You try to use a hammer as an axe, it's not going to work very well. It's a tool, and like any tool, it needs to be used properly. So when I saw this series of articles, I was somewhere between laughing and crying. So you may have heard that President Biden has again unilaterally extended the national state of emergency over a disease that pretty much is meaningless at this point. You know, at this point, COVID is pretty much a cold. It's a seasonal disease. Some people are going to get it. They're not going to feel good for very long, and we're on our way. It never was that deadly. I never saw the death rate go above about 1.4, 1.6%. And even some of those numbers we're going to find are horribly, horribly skewed. But here we have the President of the United States, again, acting as a king, saying, we are going to extend this state of emergency. I won't try to think what's in his head because I bet you that'd be painful and scary. But what you see is we need to retain this power. And then along comes the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, warning that if they actually end the public health emergency for COVID, well, the agency would be cut off from critical disease tracking data. Yeah, I did say that right. This agency, which has lied to the American people for the last 2 years, which has misrepresented, manipulated, and further destroyed trust in any of our public agencies, now says, well, we have to have this emergency so that we can collect data. We don't care if it infringes on your rights. We don't care if it's legal or not. We don't care because it gives us access to data. Data about you. According to a CDC spokesman, the CDC has no general statutory authority to direct what and how public health data are reported. Data authorities related to COVID-19 test results and hospitalizations are available now because of a public health emergency declaration. When that declaration lapses, so do the federal legal authorities to require the reporting of this important information. Well, at least they admit they have no legal authority to direct that certain health data be reported, public health data be reported. In fact, the federal government has absolutely no authority to require certain health data, public health data be reported, because the federal government has no constitutional authority to regulate or deal with public health. So I'll give them partial credit for that. But they want to maintain a public health emergency so they can keep collecting data about you. Really? Now, here's the thing about collecting data. First is, what are they collecting? Why are they collecting it? And then what are they doing with it? Well, according to certain sources, this emergency declaration enables the CDC and other health agencies to take certain actions. No, it doesn't. Because there's nothing in the Constitution that authorizes the federal government to declare an emergency to begin with. much less a public health emergency. Right? This is all fiction. This is all smoke and mirrors to pay no attention to the actual laws. Do what we say. Do what we say, not what we do. Forget the laws. We're going to tell you. So they claim it gives the CDC the authority to do certain actions, including tapping into financial reserve and waiving, into a financial reserve and waiving some requirements from the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. So they can tap into extra money. So they've apparently got money sitting around waiting just in case, which I suppose if the CDC was actually a legitimate agency may not be a half bad idea, right? Prepare for the future. And they want to just certainly waive, you know, take the kind of waive certain rules about health insurance. So what's interesting is in a bill passed by Congress, it ordered all laboratories that perform or analyze COVID-19 tests to report the results to the federal government until the declaration ends. No! I'm sorry, Congress. You don't have the authority to go searching through people's medical records. You do not. That bill is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. They say Donald Trump signed a national emergency declaration, and he's kept this in place. So that we can't blame Biden for this mess. This started under Trump. Now, there are many people who say that the emergency is over because the COVID-19 metrics have plunged. It was never that deadly. Infection rates are down. Hospitalization, everything is down. Every scientific measure of this being anything scary. Forget an emergency. It's down. But the CDC still wants that data. They still want the labs sending them data about you. The federal government wants to search your medical information without probable cause. That is an unreasonable search. They have no legal justification to have that data, much less to demand that it be turned over. But here we have an executive order started by Trump and extended by Biden that bypasses, that they use as an excuse to bypass the Constitution and collect data about you because they want it. So what are they collecting? They're collecting data they're not eligible for. So that makes me wonder, did Biden extend the emergency declaration illegally because there really is an emergency? Or because one of the agencies that report to him simply want to access data? So we've answered the first question. What data are they collecting? They want all the data about you, at least anything they can get from the quote-unquote COVID tests. But what are they going to do with that data? See, the CDC on March 15th revised the death numbers. Yeah. They took over 72,000 deaths off of the COVID mortality tracking data. They say this was because of a coding logic error. All right, I spent 30 years in IT. What they're trying to say is when we wrote the code to determine who is and isn't a COVID, either we screwed up or we lied. That's what they said. Either we screwed up, we made a mistake, or we lied. Of course, they come up as a coding logic error. Understand, when somebody writes computer code, they're telling the computer how they want it to process data. A human being punched that in. A human being set up the logic that the code runs. If it erroneously identified someone as a COVID death, it's because a human being told it to. The computer didn't just magically come up with this idea, oops, we're going to change it. No. This is a mistake. Now, the question is, was it intentional or not? We don't know. All right, I don't know. I'd be willing to allow that, you know what, hey, this could have been a simple mistake by a programmer. You put together a coding statement. You're putting together a logic. Maybe there's a formula in there, and maybe somebody got something wrong. Okay, that's possible. But think of what we have been put through over the last 2 years based on data from the CDC. You see, one of the things they changed were the pediatric deaths, right? Deaths of Americans under age 18. They dropped it by nearly 24%. Almost a quarter of the deaths that they rated as pediatric deaths, they just said, oops, our bad. Now understand, the numbers are still exceedingly small. The original number was 1,755. The current number is 1,342 or 41. Now again, that is 1,341 individual tragedies. Families that are will never be the same, and I don't wish to minimize that. But a quick look at the census data shows there are over 60 million, probably closer to 70 million Americans under the age of 18. 70 million. And we have 1,300 that have died. Now again, I understand, lies, darn lies, and statistics. But let's put some context into this. That means that of the population of Americans under age 18, approximately 0.002% have allegedly died from COVID. I say allegedly because I've got another story coming up that I want to unpack that a bit more. That is a tiny, tiny fraction of the population under 18. See, yes, I want to look at the fact that they made a mistake. The CDC made a mistake, and now they've corrected it. And whether that was an intentional misrepresentation or an accidental and unintentional mistake made while putting the code together, I'll leave to debate for others to debate at another time. But we're still dealing with a tiny percentage. See, COVID is not deadly to people under age 18 generally, but we're still making irrational decisions because we want this data and because we want children vaccinated. Now, the question then becomes, why do we trust what the CDC is saying? I mean, if the CDC got it that wrong, if the CDC is pushing for an experimental treatment to people who have a 0.002% chance of dying from it, why do we trust them with anything else? Again, there's a part of me that can understand an error. And you make a mistake. We're humans. We make mistakes. If you admit it and you fess up to it, that's fine. That to me is not the huge issue here. It's they want to collect data on COVID tests, including those under 18, for a disease that has almost no impact on them. Why? I mean, after all, Paul, if you have nothing to hide, why don't you want the government to have this data? I may have nothing to hide, but I have everything to protect. See, if the president can simply come along and say, this is an emergency, we must collect data about the American people, you are not free. You're not citizens. You are subjects. You are owned by the federal government. And all it takes is some excuse for them to wipe out your rights, search data about you, collect it, collate it, correlate it, and then use it against you. It is not an admission of guilt. It's not an admission of doing anything wrong to protect your own rights, to not be a witness against yourself, to not allow the government to unreasonably search data. It is not. We've been conditioned by the news media, by television, to believe that if you don't offer up all your data about yourself, then you must have something to hide because you're doing something wrong. No. I am protecting my rights. I am protecting my privacy. I'm protecting my data because I value my rights enough to stand up and say no. You know, it's funny. I have disagreements with certain people. I mean, I drive them nuts, right? Because I am judicious about using many of these online services. Well, for example, my accountant would love it if I were to use an online accounting system, because then he could have access to the data right away. I'm like, no, I'm not trusting them to protect my data. I don't care what tools they use. I don't care what policies. I know enough about IT to know, A, they're a target, and therefore, you know, somebody could easily make a mistake and expose my data. B, that these companies are not going to challenge an illegal government subpoena. They'll gladly turn over all of my data. Why should I trust them with it? But Paul, if you have nothing to hide, I have everything to protect. So here we have the CDC saying, listen, we have to have this state of emergency because it's giving us access to data that they don't have a legitimate reason to collect. And then we find out that we're not even sure how well they're handling that data. Oh, no, I'm not simply talking about the recent revision to some of the deaths, right? Where under 18, they adjusted by 24%. They actually adjusted the entire death rate. They took the total deaths down by roughly by like 72,000. Again, out of almost a million, that sounds like a really small number until we start looking at some more of this data. You see, there's more than just a coding logic error. You see, one of the things that me and several others have been asking is how many of these deaths that have been used to scare the American public into giving up their rights are people who died with COVID, not of COVID? It's an important distinction. If you get hit by a car but you test positive for COVID, that's not really a COVID death, is it? And this is information that we have not had good numbers on. Now, recently, CDC Director Walensky was on Fox News, and she was interviewed by Brett Baer, who posed that question, how many people died with COVID versus of COVID? And, well, she kind of dodged it. She did say the data was forthcoming. Do we trust you on that? But she basically went on to confirm that the overwhelming number of deaths, over 75%, occurred in people who had at least four comorbidities. Really? So 75% of these deaths that were are people who were already unwell. See, four comorbidities, co meaning with, and morbidities, reasons, causes of death. They had at least four causes of death. So we hear all this hyperbolic rhetoric about, oh, we had to do something because there were 600,000 and 800,000, now nearly a million deaths that are attributed to COVID. And according to the CDC director, they believe over three quarters of those deaths are people who happen to die with COVID, not necessarily from it. In other words, like I said, they were already unwell. They were already sick. They were already, in many cases, well on their way to dying. They're the ones that are being used to scare the pants off the American people. This data is now coming out. Yet they still don't have the overall data. This is her, well, the she said the overwhelming number of deaths, over 75%, occurred in people who had at least four comorbidities. So let me ask you, do you react differently when you find out that one in 330 people in America have died from COVID? Or when you find out that one in a million Americans have died from COVID? So that's where the numbers fall out. If there are roughly 330 million Americans, if 1 million Americans have died from COVID, that means one in every 330. The math is real simple. But if 75% of those deaths are people who died with COVID, not of COVID, then you're not dealing with one death in 330 Americans, but one of every 1,320 Americans. Now again, those deaths are family tragedies. Those are sons and daughters, husbands, wives, brothers and sisters. But look at what we've done to this country. Because there were people who were otherwise unwell who have died testing positive for a disease. So if we cannot trust the CDC's data, and I use the CDC's data, I tell you when I use it, because even with their manipulated data, these numbers don't make sense. But can we trust the CDC in how they handle their data? Can we trust that they're giving us an accurate analysis? In other words, are they using those darn lies and statistics to get us to do something we aren't required to do, to give up our rights, to give up our freedom and liberty, to become subjects of government because of their darn lies and statistics? If we find after 2 years that three quarters of the deaths that we were told were COVID deaths weren't COVID deaths, isn't that the case of the boy who cried wolf? Oh my God, a million people have died. Well, it's actually about 250,000. And think about those people who have died with COVID, whose impact, whose tragedy has been diluted because they were made much as part of a much larger pool because of politics. See, if we look at this and see that rather than saying a million Americans have died and many of them were healthy, we find out, no, really 250,000 or somewhere around there have died. And they were really sick. They had on average four comorbidities. And as so many people said, and so many doctors said, rather than treating the healthy, we need to treat the sick. Rather than looking for treatments for people who are not at risk, we need to focus on those people who are at risk. And then we look at those who are at risk, and you find the other medical information where you find out that, oh, by the way, yes, there are treatments, both prophylactic and symptomatic, that will treat this disease and give you a much greater chance of surviving, even with your other medical conditions. How much time and effort were wasted on a vaccine that's not a vaccine, on an experimental drug, to treat healthy Americans that was taken away from finding ways to protect and to treat those most vulnerable around us, to treat those who have those comorbidities, to give them a better chance of surviving, to treat those who are most likely to have serious complications. And instead, we spent our time focusing on vaccinating children with a vaccine that's not a vaccine, but a gene therapy for a group of people, a demographic that have a statistically zero chance of dying from this. See, that's the thing about bad data. Again, I spent 30 years in IT. And we have this saying, GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. by putting garbage into the system, by putting this garbage data into the system and using it to manipulate how people react and what people will do, not only have we destroyed the lives of millions of Americans, have we taken away their rights and their liberties, have we traumatized children, have we destroyed small businesses, we have focused our attention on the wrong thing because we allowed garbage data into the system and we never, ever thought to verify, most of us never thought to verify it before using it as an excuse to destroy not only our lives, but the lives of those around us. You see, it's not simply that your rights were taken away, that you voluntarily gave up your rights. You gave up your right to walk around without a mask. You gave up your right to walk around without being a medical guinea pig. You walked around without giving up your rights to simply live as you see fit, to make your own medical decisions and for those in your family. You gave up those rights because of this bad data. But even worse, many Americans took it upon themselves to deny others their rights because they disagreed with them. People have called me names for, I was called grandma killer for not wearing a mask. That's just me. How many people have lost their jobs because they refused to be a medical experiment? How many businesses were shut down because the government deemed them non-essential? Every job, every business is essential to someone. Nope. How many people wandered around yelling and screaming and chastising and shaming others because they disagreed with their analysis of the data? This data and this pandemic, this scare, this fraudulent medical emergency has done more than simply empower government. It has crippled and crushed our own understanding of our rights and our need to protect the rights of others. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, please head over to constitutionstudy.com. That you can find out everything we're doing here at the Constitution Study. You can ask a question. You can ask that I answered here on the radio program. I'm looking for more of those. You can sign up for our newsletter. Be notified once a month of what's going on here at the Constitution Study. Find out where I'll be speaking, what events I'll be involved with. You can invite me to come speak at your group or your event. I am looking for venues around the country to speak and to teach about the Constitution. It doesn't need to be a huge event, but if you got something going on in your neighborhood or in your group and you think they might be interested in what I have to say, just go to the constitutionstudy.com. You'll find request a speaker in the menu and we'll see if we can make it happen. And by the way, if you're not charging for your event, I don't charge to show up and speak at it. I think this information is too important to put everything behind a paywall. Now, also, please check out HealthyCell.com. We're talking about COVID. You want to keep healthy. One of the best things you can do is have a good immune system. That's what my doctor tells me. That's what doctors I've interviewed tell me. The immune system is your first and natural point of defense against COVID, the flu, and pretty much everything. So what can you do to improve your immune system? Well, HealthyCell, they've looked at the vitamins. Vitamins and minerals will help boost your immune system. They've put together a formula called Immune Super Boost. It is designed to support your body's natural immune system, what the system God gave you to keep you healthy. And it's not a packet of pills. There are over a dozen immune supplements in a simple travel-ready gel pack. So if you want to keep your immune system up, like I give it an extra boost when I'm traveling and meeting with people, then give Immune Super Boost a try. Go to HealthyCell.com, try Immune Super Boost or any of their formulas. But when you check out, use the code OUTLOUD. You will get 20% off your first order and you will help HealthyCell know that you came from us and helped support the Constitution Study and other programs here on America Out Loud. So again, that's HealthyCell.com. Use the code OUTLOUD at checkout for 20% off your first order.
In these uncertain times in our economy, precious metals have become the go-to for many investors as they attempt to hedge their portfolios against the uncertainty associated with supply chain issues, inflation, and lockdowns. Our gold guy, Ira, is the best in the business at delivering physical gold or silver to customers across the country. His prices are exceptionally low, and his service is superb. Go to OurGoldGuy.com. That's OurGoldGuy.com. Click Contact and tell them J.D. Rucker sent you.
Our invincible American spirit drives the most audacious experiment in the history of self-government. America Out Loud celebrates the American spirit every minute of every day. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today we're asking, can we trust the data? Or are we dealing simply with lies, darn lies, and statistics? We started off by looking at the fact that the CDC apparently wants this national faux emergency to go on because they're using it to collect data about you. They admit that they don't have the legal authority to require data, but under a national emergency order issued originally by Trump and extended by Biden, well, they are illegally telling laboratories to report data to the federal government. They are illegally searching for data about you. Maybe not you personally, but they want to know if you took a test. They want to know what those answers are so that they can, well, further cook the books. Because we found that, first of all, they've already adjusted some of their death numbers because, well, what they refer to as a coding logic error. But even Director Walensky admits that at least 75% of the COVID deaths that they report are actually people who were already very, very sick. They had at least four comorbidities, four other causes of death. Doesn't that sound like a darn lie or a statistic? So can we trust them with the data? Now, I'm going to branch off just a little bit here. Because there's certain other things about the not just data, but the facts, the truth, that are important. Now, I've talked before about Surgeon General Murtha and his totalitarian bent towards controlling the speech of others. Now, again, we're talking the Surgeon General, someone who is supposedly there to advise on public health issues. Again, something the federal government has no legal authority to play with. And somebody who just a few days ago was calling on 10 companies to censor information that contradicts the federal government. That is a totalitarian tyrant. They want to control. You don't talk about something that contradicts what we are saying. It's the equivalent of verbal sedition, right? If you disagree with the government, well, that's seditious and you need to be punished. And he actually called on companies to, tech companies, social media companies, to censor you because you disagreed with him and his position at the federal government. Now, this did lead to some backlash. I know I talked about it. I've heard others talk about it. But you always wonder sometimes if you have an effect. Well, Surgeon General Murthy was on Fox News Sunday the other day, and in response, he was asked a question about how people are, the ongoing frustration we feel about the responses coming from the Biden administration has, well, it seemed to be more political than medical, to which Murthy called for a respectful, thoughtful dialogue with one another. This is the same man who just a few days ago wanted your speech, your dialogue censored if it disagreed with his official political position. He went on to say, "I worry about the temperature rising in our dialogue, about people being shut out in terms of their point of view being heard. We need to be able to hear all voices. We need to be able to respect one another." Well, why don't you turn the mirror on yourself, Mr. Murthy? Or maybe that's exactly what happened. Maybe enough people pointed out the rank hypocrisy of this man, who pointed out the totalitarian bent of determining the speech of others, of wanting the federal government to coerce tech companies into censoring speech they don't like. You see, he was the one pouring gasoline on the fire of the dialogue by trying to shut people up. If he worries about the temperature rising in our dialogue, he was a part of the cause of it. He was one of the ones throwing the gasoline. If he's worried about people being shut out in terms of their point of view, he was the one trying to do that. Now, he wasn't the only one, but he was one of them. So now he goes on a national program and says, "You know, we should be worried about the temperature of the dialogue. We need to be respectful and a thoughtful dialogue with one another. You know, maybe I'm just cynical, but to me, this smacks of a political walking back of an unpopular position." Now, the good news is he's walking it back, which means enough people got in his face, made his life miserable for his totalitarian bent, that he felt it necessary to publicly walk it back. Not something that people with a tyrannical bent do easily. So the good news is, yeah, you can have an effect by bringing the truth to the matter. You know, it's funny, just the other day, someone asked me what I was doing about certain things going on. I said, "Well, you know, how about things like letting people know, about educating about the Constitution and giving them the tools to help push back against these tyrannical infringements on our rights?" Now, listen, I'm not saying I had anything. Mr. Murthy doesn't listen to me. He doesn't listen to the Constitution study. I'd be shocked if anybody in Washington, D.C., paid any attention to the Constitution study. I recognize I'm a small fish in a big pond. But I do what I can do to let as many people know as possible. That's why when I open the program or I open the segment, I'm thankful that you're here. I recognize that I am one voice among millions. And the fact that you value it enough to come and listen to what I have to say, it means an awful lot to me. So while I have no delusions of grandeur, the fact that enough Americans saw the tyranny of Mr. Murthy and pushed back hard enough for him to walk back his position shows that there's glimmers of hope. I'm not saying this is all fixed. I'm not saying we're done. It's that little glimmer of hope that reminds you it's not necessarily a lost cause. Yes, the road is long. The way is hard. There's a lot of work to get done. But these little things that remind you, yes, you can make a difference. Yes, we can change things. Yes, there's still hope for the rising generation. That's what I see when I see Mr. Murthy realizing he stepped in it. Now, we spent most of the day talking about the saying, you know, there are lies, darn lies, and statistics. But there's another saying common in politics. Never let a crisis go to waste. You see, the Biden administration asked Congress for $22.5 billion, yes, billion with a B, in COVID-19 relief funds. Huh? Yes, they want to take money from you to spend on something not legally authorized to fix a problem they helped create. Yeah. Now, this didn't happen. This was in the omnibus bill. That pork-laden, gross, disgusting, throw everything in there because we got to pass it. That excuse for financial management that Congress goes through every few months. Well, it didn't get passed. The money was pulled because of infighting among the Democratic caucus. I didn't shed one tear of that. Well, Nancy Pelosi is back and telling the Biden administration that he should ask for more money. In fact, they want $40 billion or more in COVID relief funds for a scamdemic that is obviously winding down. So why do they need this money and even more money? Well, the original purpose for the $22.5 billion was to further vaccinate Americans. Excuse me, why am I paying for your vaccination? Why are you paying for your neighbor's vaccination? This $22.5 billion doesn't appear out of thin air. The federal government's going to borrow it in your name. And you and your children are going to have to pay it back. The federal government also wants to purchase antivirals and monoclonal antibody treatments. Oh, not for Americans, for global relief to send overseas. They want to spend your money not to help you, but to help others. Now listen, first of all, there is no legal justification for the federal government to be buying vaccinations and giving them to the American people. Not a power delegate. It's not something Congress is authorized to collect taxes for. They can collect taxes to pay the debt, provide for the common defense, and the general welfare of the United States, of the Union, of the federal government. That does not include vaccinating Americans. It certainly does not include coercing Americans into participating in a medical experiment. And if the American people wish to donate treatments like antivirals and monoclonal antibodies to the global relief effort, do it yourself. There's nothing that stops you from stroking a check to an organization that is purchasing these and distributing them to the other parts of the world. There's nothing that's stopping you. How dare you claim the authority to reach into your neighbor's pocket to make you feel better about giving away treatment to other people? That is greed, that is theft, and that is something that we don't talk about in polite society in America, but it's true. See, this isn't about being kind and nice. This is about stealing from the American people to make certain elites feel better. We want the Americans vaccinated. We can't convince them to do it on their own, so we're going to bribe them and we're going to coerce them and we're going to get you, the American people, to pay for it. We want to look like we're generous people, so we're going to send money, we're going to send treatments overseas, and we're going to get you to pay for it. That just proves that Nancy Pelosi and the Biden administration, they are greedy, conniving people. Because they want credit for doing something, but they don't actually want to do it. They want someone else. They want credit for your donations. They want credit for you purchasing vaccines for others. They want credit for you purchasing treatments for other countries. That is greed. By the way, that is also extortion, because they are collecting money for something they are not legally authorized to do. And you know what? I bet you they wouldn't stand much of a chance doing this if it wasn't for this thing called a national public health emergency that President Trump fraudulently initiated and President Biden has fraudulently extended. See, these are the consequences of bad data, of the garbage in, garbage out. It's not simply that data is misrepresented. It's not simply that it's used to scare the American people into giving up their rights and their freedoms, to making questionable medical decisions. It's not even simply being used to intimidate people into silencing the opposition. It's for spending your money on things that they're not authorized to. But it truly has deadly consequences. Yes, deadly consequences. Because, interesting, you notice that Congress wants to spend money on monoclonal antibodies and on antiviral drugs, brand new treatments. Yep, yeah. Surgeon General Murthy that's saying, oh, don't talk about things we don't want you to talk about. Don't talk about things like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. That is misinformation. It should be purged. Well, research at the University of Miami did a retrospective analysis of a national database of adults 18 and older that had a recorded COVID-19 infection between January 2020 and July 2021. And they compared those who used different treatment. They compared those who used ivermectin but not remdesivir with those who used remdesivir but not ivermectin. Now remember, ivermectin is what supposedly fraudulent treatment that the federal government has done everything to prevent doctors from prescribing for you. Prevent you from using a drug that's been around for decades, a drug that won the Nobel Peace Prize, that has been safely used in humans, for a brand new drug, remdesivir, that they are not only coercing you, they're coercing hospitals and doctors to get you to take remdesivir, not ivermectin. Now, the researchers controlled for certain variables, things like age and gender and race and nicotine use, diabetes, obesity, all right? Other things, to try and come up with an understanding of the outcomes of these drugs. Now, the risk difference they reported was approximately 5.25%. Now, there's a lot of statistics in this report, and I'm not a statistician. I'm not going to try and buffalo my way through this. What I will do is statisticians are telling me that these numbers show there's a statistically significant lower risk of death with ivermectin over remdesivir, which really doesn't surprise me at all when you find that when you check the history of remdesivir. Remdesivir was first developed as an HIV treatment, an AIDS treatment, except it got pulled from testing because too many people died while taking it. Now, there's a lot of details. Again, statistics can be dangerous, and that's why I'm trying to give you my best understanding of the data they've collected without getting all to the mumbo-jumbo. I don't want to use just a bunch of big words, but I do want to give you their conclusion, or at least the conclusion I draw from it. The researchers wrote that further double-blind, placebo-controlled RCTs with large samples are required for definite conclusions. In the future, if more publications are published with the similar result to the current analysis, the certainty of evidence will increase. See, they look at it and says, based on what we're seeing, there's a statistically significant lower chance of you dying if you're with COVID, having positively been infected with COVID, being not just positively tested, you are symptomatic, as I understand it. They're saying there is a statistically significant difference that if you take ivermectin rather than remdesivir, that you will live. But they're also saying there needs to be more studies. And that has been the mantra of most every doctor that I would trust out there. We need more studies. They need to be good studies. Notice they said double-blind, placebo-controlled studies, large sample size to come to a conclusion. But it makes you wonder, with all the data coming out about the fact that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine work, about it being used in other parts of the world with much more success, why are those in government pushing a treatment that has had serious deadly consequences? Why would you try something new and untested with a history of being pulled from testing because of the death rate? Rather, why would you promote that over something that has been a long history of human use, a long history of safe use, and now a growing history and growing evidence that it is effective? Well, because somebody has an agenda, and they can use their lies, they can use darn lies, and they can use statistics to help you agree with their agenda, to go along with their agenda. It's one of the reasons why I know it's difficult, I know it's hard, but it's important that you understand when you give someone the authority to tell you what something means, you have put yourself under their sway. You are under their authority. And when those people happen to be bureaucrats and politicians, understand their decisions are going to be guided much more by the politics than by the medicine. I listen to my doctor. I talk to my doctor. I listen to my doctor. I take my doctor's advice. Now, not everybody, but my doctor also happens to be one that reads the studies, that talks to other doctors, that doesn't simply take what the federal government says and regurgitate it like a bird, like a mama bird feeding their babies. We have to think for ourselves. Yes, we need trusted advisors, but they must earn that trust. Simply having a doctor's coat doesn't mean you should be trusted. Do you know what they call the person that comes in dead last in law school, in medical school? The person with the absolute worst passing score in medical school? They call them doctor. So we need to vet the people that we're getting data from. And if that vetting doesn't hold up, it still is up to us to find better advisors. But just because someone gets a government paycheck doesn't mean they know what they're talking about. Often, it's been my experience that often government employees are there because they couldn't or wouldn't bother to get other jobs. Not all of them. I've worked with many people in government, and they work very hard and they're very smart. But I've also met many people in government who they work in government because they couldn't get a job elsewhere. They failed everywhere else. And pretty much every government employee I have ever worked with has had some sort of politics in the back of their mind. Are we looking good? Are we presenting ourselves well? What will be the outcome if we do this? So the question now comes back to, can we trust the data? I'm going to come back to what Ronald Reagan said so many times, trust but verify. Just because some bureaucrat tells you that this is misinformation, don't believe them. Just because some bureaucrat tells you that, oh, we need this so we can collect it, don't believe them. Just because some bureaucratic agency puts out data doesn't mean it's true. Just because somebody says, we need money to do these things, doesn't mean what they're doing is right or legitimate. And just because some government bureaucrat or somebody with a government paycheck tells you, don't take this drug because we tell you it's not good, don't believe them. The days of trusting people in government are long past. It's funny. You know, I ask this question all the time. How can you tell when a politician is lying? And the answer is almost always some variation of their lips are moving. And we all laugh. But why do we trust them? Not just the politician, but the bureaucrat that's dependent on the politician for their job. No, we need to take responsibility for verifying this data, because it is not the politician or the bureaucrat that will suffer the consequences. It's you, and it's me, and it's our families, and it's our children. So if for no other reason than that, trust, but verify. Because if the data you're using came from garbage, the decision you make will smell. And you may rant and rave and complain when that smelly mess is left in your lap, but ultimately, the responsibility is yours. Because either you didn't do your due diligence, or you expected someone else to do it for you. And now you have to live with the consequences. Just a reminder that all of my shows typically go to podcast a day or two after the broadcast is heard on the radio. You can hear them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you get your podcast. And if you do me a favor, give me a like, give me a subscribe, go to Apple Podcasts, give me a rating and a subscription. Help other people find the Constitution Study. Help others find the truth that is out there. Help others to join us as we spread and share the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.